This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Namai, haere mai, kia ora tēnā koe. And hello to our French listeners today. Au revoir, because today is Bastille Day. Welcome to the afternoon on Bastille Day. Au revoir to all our listeners and who speak French, and to all our French listeners are listening around the world on a Sunday afternoon. It's probably Saturday still in Paris, the land of love. Through the afternoon, we might play some French music this afternoon to celebrate Bastille Day. I haven't seen any French flags around the city, so where are them all? They should be hanging from the rafters, all the French flags today, and hope you get some French food into you today, but let's move on. Opinion is mine on Column Comment, Free FM 89.0. The Waikato Times says dropkicks drive doctor and family from Hamilton. A doctor and his family have been driven from their central Hamilton home by drug use, domestic violence, child abuse, and other antisocial behaviour, he says, which makes him embarrassed for the city he grew up in. Well, I totally agree with this man, because it's at a motel, which is, of course, Thackeray Street. It's near where Anon. We talked about this not so long ago, and, of course, our friend Trevor lives in that particular area too. Well, according to information under the Official Information Act, shows that police had 40 interactions, yes, 40 interactions at Anon, Colonial City Motel and Ashwood Manor Hotel in 23, and so it goes on. Because it's a greater problem in the CBD, and last night a 12-year-old girl was missing in the city. They found her, thankfully, but it was rumoured she was hanging out with some of the homeless in that particular area outside the BNZ and seen on one of those scooters, the e-bikes and scooters and all that. Well, it's time to take action, and I just got a bit angry at the police in a van just drove past the BNZ and didn't do a thing. Come on, please, time to get your act together. You're meant to be looking after the people in the city. The people have had it with these homeless, the drugs, the abuse, the swearing, etc., etc. And my feelings go out to that doctor who's got to leave his house with his family because of what's going on in those motels. It is just on 16 minutes to 1:195, 1:170 to go, July 14, 2024. This day, 1984, the David Longley-led Labor government sweeps into office, defeating the incumbent National government after the snap election called by Sir Robert Muldoon. First New Zealand general election held today in 1852. 1789, on this day, the Paris mob stormed the Bastille. History. This day, 1950s, Epi Rana Nata dies, 76.
Climb aboard a butterfly and take off on the breeze. Let your worries flutter by and do the things you please. In the land where dollar bills are falling off the tree. On a dreamer's holiday.
On a dreamer's holiday.
Every day for breakfast.
This day in American history, 1881, Pat Garrett kills outlaw William Bonney, a.k.a. Billy the Kid. History this day in 1910, studio co-founder and cartoon pioneer William Hanna born. He died in 2001. In 1998, the co-founder of McDonald's, Richard McDonald, dies. The New Zealand Hit Parade at number 14, New Zealand, top 20, July 14, 1968, 55 years ago today. Yes, the Irish Rovers and Glen Campbell on guitar with the Unicorn.
A long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free when the earth was being born. But the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Now God seen some sinning and it gave him pain. And he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo and take some of them
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn.
Old Noah was there to answer the call. He finished up making the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you
green alligators and long-necked geese,
some Humpty Back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn.
Then Noah looked out through the driving rain. Them unicorns were hiding, playing silly games, kicking and splashing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorns.
There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees.
Noah cried, close the door, 'cause the rain is pouring, and we just can't wait for no unicorn. The ark started moving, it drifted with the tide. Them unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried. And the waters came down and sort of floated them away. And that's why you never seen a unicorn to this very day. You'll see
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, you're never going to see no unicorn.
Pretty FM 89.0, independent community media, yes, that iconic song. Will Miller leading out the Irish Rovers with Glenn Campbell on guitar and the unicorn. It's 8 minutes to one. Well, 1XH Hamilton went to air 1949, 74 years ago this year. Housed in the old Hamilton Borough Council offices in Alba Street, which were built in 1932. They were there for years, broadcasting on 1310 AM. In 1968, the station became 1ZH. It also housed 1XW, National Radio, and also housed the NZBC television in the basement. Country singer Patsy Rigger, then 5 years old, won a talent contest on 1XH. She was small, so she stood on a chair to reach the microphone. The broadcast was live to air. So, yes, 1XH, 1ZH and all its parts out of the Alma Street building. Yes, they began broadcasting 1949, 74 years ago this year. Talking about music in Hamilton, the Bellamy Brothers, David and Howard, November 29, 1980 at the Founders Theatre. On the country charts, 20 number one singles, 25 top 10 and around 90 hits. Tours including Germany, Italy, Japan, South Korea, even Bosnia. And, of course, in 1976, they had a worldwide hit with this one. It was a country crossover into the pop charts. You know the song well. It's 6-1.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky. And there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us. It's loving embrace, just wonder, as it warms your face, you can't hold back. Just let your love flow like a mountain stream, and let your love grow with the smallest of dreams, and let your love show, and you'll know what I mean. It's the season.
FM 89.0, independent community media. Such a good song for Bastille Day. Let your love flow. And if you're celebrating tonight with a bit of wine, etc., etc., a meal, you feel a bit French, today, take in a French movie or bring up a French movie on all the devices, etc., etc. Enjoy yourself today on Bastille Day. So, look after yourselves this evening, of course, on this Bastille Day. And hello out to everybody who is a member of the French community here in town. Au revoir to you this afternoon. We're celebrating today the birthday of Cartoon Pioneer. He was one of the men behind Tom and Jerry, but he was one of the co-founders of a studio called Hanna-Barbera. And of course, there's nothing bigger than a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. Remember this?
The biggest show in town is Huckleberry Hound. For all you guys and gals, the biggest clown in town is Huckleberry Hound. With all his cartoon pals, it's Huckleberry fun. It's for everyone. So come on, gather round. Get yourself all set. Clean up your TV set for Huckleberry Hound. Huckleberry, Huckleberry,
and you can't remember this.
Flintstones, meet the Flintstones. They're the modern Stone Age family. From the town of Bedrock, they're a page right out of history. Someday, maybe Fred will win the fight.
First primetime cartoon on American television around 1962. More from Hanna-Barbera throughout the afternoon. It's 2-1 on a Sunday afternoon. And I hope your day is going very, very well. It's a beautiful day outside, a little bit cool, but just look after yourselves. Great summer's day as we celebrate Bastille Day. From 1968, a worldwide hit. Frenchman Paul Maria and his orchestra at 1:01. Free FM, 89.0, independent community media, Paul Marriott and his orchestra as we celebrate Bastille Day. Madame and Monsieur, hope you're having a great old day outside. More French themes coming up. We've got a song coming up right now from Les Miserables. This is Susan Boyle. This has took her to the top of the charts. I Have a Dream.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by, when hope was high and life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I prayed that God would be forgiving. Then I was young and unafraid, when dreams were made and used and wasted. There was no ransom to be paid, no song unsung, no wine untasted. But the time come at night, with a voice as soft as thunder, as they tear your hopes apart, and they turn your dream to shame.
FM 89.0. Scottish singer Susan Boyle from Les Miserables. And I dreamed a dream. Good afternoon, Mr. Driscoll.
Good afternoon, and yes, today is Bastille Day, when the French nation commemorates 235 years ago the start of the French Revolution, after a mob of citizens stormed a state prison, the fortress in Paris, built as a fortress way back in the 14th century.
Am I right? They only found about a couple of prisoners in the Bastille when they did storm it, so we don't know. It also housed at one time the infamous Marquis de Sade. Remember, he was in the Bastille for a time?
And the young lady singing, a lovely young lady from Alsace, is trying to keep alive, as well as the French that she's singing, the lyrics of old in her mother tongue of Alsatian. Brought up, she was in a small village called Bechvillers, right in the corner of France, north of Strasbourg.
It's quite interesting, on the day that they did storm the Bastille, at the French elections, they stopped the emergence of the Pen Party, the ultra right-wing party. The Macron did a deal with their branch of the Labour Party, and yep, so you have to do deals when it comes to politics.
And speaking of elections, it brings us to news that's shared with Gary Schofield of Hamilton, an American citizen as well as a New Zealander.
Hi, Gary.
Bonjour.
Monsieur, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you very much. And just to add to your deliberations on the French, the aspects, also French in New Zealand, Akaroa, French settlement here, and not a lot of people are aware that really there was an enormous struggle between what would have been the French Empire and the British Empire, and which of the two giants were going to rule the world.
Yep.
And that was decided by the Battle of Trafalgar.
Yep.
Because you can't really extend or support an empire without a fleet. So whoever won that battle, that is why it is such a crucial monument that changed the course of human history.
To talk about the United States, I watched that movie, The Madness of King George, the other night with Nigel Hawthorne and other actors. He played King George. While he was being told to calm down and he's going to be put in a chair and strapped in, he looked at the globe and said he called it the colonies, and he was told it's not the colonies anymore. It's the United States. And Nigel Hawthorne, as King George, said, yeah, he kind of laughed at that. So the French and the Americans have got a lot of history together too.
Correct. And because of the French intervention, which allowed the United States to be free of rule from the British, that was Lafayette, that was also the French fleet. That was also the Battle of Yorktown, and that meant that because of the blockade of the French fleet, that made that a significant defeat for Great Britain. Also, George Washington wanted to fight the battle in New York and was talked out of it by Lafayette. Yep. So there is a lot to be thankful to the French for the presence of our United States of America to this day.
And if you look back in history, Lafayette was lucky not to lose his head in the French Revolution.
Very true. But I also want to get back to our politics of the United States, too, especially on this day of the assassination attempt of former President Trump, which is extraordinary. And I was also hoping that we could get some reaction from, you know, perhaps your own thoughts on this topic, as it reminds me very much of the 1960s. And I noticed that RFK has come out pleading for unity in a country. He, of course, had the experience of the loss of his uncle, John F. Kennedy, and his father. And so it's a very brutal and emotional time in the United States right now, today, and part of history.
I have just got to say, Robert Kennedy Jr., he's a lost cause. He's a conspiracy theorist. I think his family practically disowned him.
Well, the Kennedy family has supported President Biden, of course. And we have to, we can't let a week go by without addressing the entirety of this matter. And I would just like to thank one of your listeners in Christchurch. And I think I remember saying a week was a long time in politics, and it certainly is. And I've come to the conclusion that your listener was correct about President Biden. And in fact, I know that the press, in almost in its entirety, are saying that President Biden was mixing up, you know, Trump with his vice president, etc. He wasn't. He, out of 10 or 12,000 words in a very competent press response and brutal questioning, over that period of time, he got a couple of words mixed up. I thought, and I watched it in its entirety, I thought President Biden did an excellent job of explaining complicated issues forcefully and competently, and in my mind, he would easily pass a competence test on that basis alone. So I'm leaning towards the prescient comments of your wonderful listeners when they say this fighting over who should succeed President Biden is doing nothing but destroying the chances of the Democratic Party and their best chance of defeating President Trump, who by now, if history is a guide, will become so extremely popular because of the assassination attempt today.
And of course, I've had to fact check myself in the last couple of days here on air on both programs that I do, that I made a mistake and I fact checked them. So, hey, give Biden a chance, as he's deserted by George Clooney in Hollywood and other Hollywood notables have withdrawn money from the campaign.
Yes, and donors speak, but what do donors want in return? You always have to ask that question as well. But we also have to mention the NATO meeting, very significant, because after all, that was the backdrop to the presentation from President Biden. And, you know, I have a quick question, because you're always very knowledgeable about these things. I seem to remember that NATO was formed to buffer and offset the Warsaw Pact. When you think back to those times, wouldn't you say?
When the North Atlantic Treaty Organization was formed in 1949, the original 15 nations pledged to safeguard the principles of democracy, individual liberty, the rule of law, and to promote peace, well-being, and stability. A defensive military alliance by stipulating that an armed attack against one or more of the members in Europe or North America shall be considered an attack on all. So the principles are there, they're sound, but I think Ukraine is still waiting.
Well, no, it's wonderful to have fact-checking as we're actually speaking, but in terms of what I was meaning was, in fact, the Warsaw Pact came after the formation of NATO. I mean, I've always been told the opposite, but of course, it's 6 years later that the Warsaw Pact was formed to combat as a defense against NATO. You know, so it's funny how we get lots of things filtered through to us. But one thing I did notice about the defense, and NATO, of course, is now very strong, and it's an instrument of our military democratic countries, but yet it has its own foreign policy because it was able to refute and turn down the Putin plan for ending the war. And it has its own funding. So that's a very powerful institution. So when it met, I'm surprised that not a single journalist, especially now that our Prime Minister, Mr. Luxon, is giving some of our money to this cause, how do they define the end of the war? What's the definition of victory? What on the ground is this money going to, and our plan for how we see peace? So there really was a little short of the word peace or negotiation, and in fact, President Biden has said that he won't speak to Putin.
Yep.
So, you know, so instead of all these questions that repeatedly attacked President Biden about his competency, one of those questions, at least, or many, should be about his policy, which seemed to be a little bit lacking in the balance.
Yeah, there's... Oh, this is politics, and you've seen it in both countries here in New Zealand, also in Washington. And what is Stuart saying about the current atmosphere where he is at the moment?
Well, he is in Washington at the moment, and I talked to him before the news, like moments before the news, about the assassin attempt in... it's near Pittsburgh, by the way. So I actually don't know his current feeling at the moment, but hopefully for the world, as President Biden has come out and said, that this has to be, you know, it has to be deplored, that we can't have violence of this nature in a country like the United States. But just also another thing that's missing from the conversation, did you know that China has troops on the border with Europe now? Did you know that?
I didn't know. I've been going through a lot of material this week. I've been following the UK elections and the aftermath of that. And what a brilliant ceremony at Westminster. as the new MPs. There was one MP who had a guide dog. We've got a he wasn't an MP, but he's gone to the House of Lords. He's called the Bionic MP. He's a guy who lost his arms and feet or legs sepsis.
Yes,
and
yes,
he got a it's against the rules in the Commons. Stop. You can't clap, but through the speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, this man was given a rounding standing ovation.
Yes, good.
And of course, Sir Lindsay Hoyle visited this Conservative MP in hospital as he recovered, and he's gone now to the House of Lords. But as we say, the old Etonians have gone, like Jacob Rees-Mogg and others. It's been a total clean out of the Conservative Party. Maybe, and Sir Lindsay Hoyle said, maybe we'll get some sense back into the Commons. And Boris has gone too, so...
Right, but again, as important as this is, there still should be some discussion about what changes on the battleground when China sends their troops to Belarus, which is in this particular case what has happened. And if I could just explain
for a minute
what the significance of that is, and I'm surprised that journalists don't ask these questions or look at the implications of it. So by putting troops of China on the border with Belarus, Belarus is also a likely invasion point that Russia could use, or even Belarus could enter the conflict, which would open a new front. So according to the laws of military strategy, Ukraine must prepare for that possibility. So it must take troops that would go to the hundreds of miles of front line all the way down on the east and the south, must therefore defend against the possibility of another attack. So that has weakened the defense of Ukraine without China firing a shot.
Well, how many more generals does Putin have to fire before he gets his way in the Ukraine?
Yes, well, the Ukraine, as I was disappointed to see, is no ending if you have a war without an end or a goal. So I do think that we should be told what specifically the goal is and when we could declare a victory, because it is not like World War One. In a lot of comparisons, static lines are like World War One, trench warfare is like World War One, but basically what you've got, and it's huge casualty warfare in modern warfare with drones and artillery, yeah, because you can see where everybody is from satellites. So nothing is hidden like it used to be in the old confrontations. And by enabling artillery to wipe out entire areas, and they have FAV 3000s now, 3,000 pounds of explosives. So it's very devastating, and then you have to pour in more and more troops into recruitment. So we're really talking, if these figures are correct, that you've got 1 million young men as casualties of this war.
Yep.
So at some point, and this is to say nothing of the war in Gaza, which is ongoing, even though it doesn't reach the same of our radar screens, it should, for international law and other considerations of those poor people who are, and many are starving. So these are the kind of conflicts that we would love to have the president and our prime minister address, of how we see a way out of this before there isn't one.
The interface between different belief systems, always a source of conflict and lasting recrimination, and that's history, isn't it?
I see history as being about people's things more than people's beliefs. So it's really, war is usually when you're after somebody else's stuff. That's the way that I view history. And having a belief system that holds you together as a team, because we're very much like the beehive.
Yeah.
You know, the bees are community creatures. They go to war, surprisingly, if you didn't know that.
Yes.
And they're held together by their sense of community, and their pheromone would be another substitute for belief.
Yeah.
So really, war is about expanding your nation. And in history, if you don't expand your nation and become greater and stronger and more powerful, you're gobbled up by a competing one. I think that is the history of mankind, the way it's been written.
Would that have been in the minds of those European whalers who were landing in New Zealand way before the Treaty of Waitangi became a constitutional milestone?
I don't think they were thinking of geopolitical forces at the time. I think they were making an opportunity of what we have ultimately become as a country, which is a country of traders. So because we have wonderful, our Ministry of Foreign Affairs is actually the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Trade is an important part of who we are as a country, and those whalers began that commerce, probably not realizing that they were setting up possibly a country in the future.
So it's only by a quirk of history that we're not trading under the flag?
Yes,
Tricolour,
yes,
blue,
Tricolour
white and red.
Was the key.
Rather than the Union Jack. It's interesting to speculate.
Always.
And another point, Gary, we are seeking the music that's available coming from France, and we strike the aberration that they didn't speak French as their first tongue, but grew up generations in a corner of France speaking the Alsatian language, which they deny to be a mere I'm feeling like President Biden.
Not at all. But interestingly, it was the British Empire, or at that stage, it was Britain that really created France, because France was so disparate counties with their own governance. And, of course, what held them together was the Hundred Years' War, that England was continually invading them and taking their territory, threatened so badly that they formed their own country because of that. So that's another irony.
Yep.
Also that Alsace and Lorraine were the key provinces that were that were given to Germany after the Napoleonic War, which meant that that Germany became a power with those extra provinces, and was able to form through Bismarck a strong Germany, and ultimately you got World War One and Two. So that's also how that fits together.
And you can't forget that old Napoleon was in the mix there, and he got well beaten by the Duke of Wellington. He was sent into exile on an island. Then he escaped from that island, got back into France, and was defeated again, and he got sent packing elsewhere. So old Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yes, indeed. And there is some rumour from the arsenic in his hair that he was poisoned, but as a world leader, he presented quite a threat when you look at the casualties, millions, that those Napoleonic wars caused. And as I pointed out, the result of that was that France was penalized by losing Alsace and Lorraine.
Yep.
So there you go.
Just one final point. You talked about the journalists. Well, Tucker Carlson and the crew from Fox News, they've got a fixation with Joe Biden, of course, at the moment. So that's all they're talking about. Joe Biden, Joe Biden, Joe Biden.
Well, like I mentioned about your listener, I have come to the conclusion that Joe Biden is competent and would pass a competency test based on that press. So you remember, it was all built up to be, this will be the interview, and it will be live, and it will be what will make or break his presidency. Well, I thought he did a very good job of dealing with all those very brutal questions on very important topics that make them all. And my only criticism was of the journalism that should have asked fairly important and significant questions that we all should know about his policies.
Hey, we've got to go because we've got more interviews to go, but have a glass of French wine for me tonight on Bastille Day.
I will indeed, and it's been a pleasure as always.
It's good.
And let's hear some more from Sylvie Reff, the singer, in French.
Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye.
Mais quel dommage si t'étais tiens ne pas te faire je m'étais résigné mais quel dommage si t'étais tiens ne pas te faire je m'étais résigné je te rêve libre et belle.
comme on m'a rêvé. Car les servantes rêvent de reines et les reines des libertés. Car les servantes rêvent de reines.
I think we need another bit of the French national anthem. Let's play another bit of the Marseillaise. Fabulous music. And of course we did play earlier Susan Boyle from Les Miserables, I Dreamed a Dream. So it is Bastille Day if you just woken up on the Sunday afternoon. Good afternoon, Russell Armitage.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Not a bad day.
It's a winter's day. And
now where do we start?
Well, I hear that there's an Irish actor who acts all eight parts in an English version of a Russian play 125 years ago. Now, could he have contemplated translations and one Irish actor in the future when the play was originally penned?
No, no, I couldn't, and I still don't, having seen it. Where do I go? I mean, I sent out an email to my people to encourage them to go, because having the chance to see, you know, a major West End hit on our screens here is wonderful. And I gather they've got quite a lot of people going this morning. I love Chekhov. I know all the plays. And I was interested to see what he had, what Andrew Scott, whom I admire enormously, had done with this. But having been, I'm not sure why he did it, I'm afraid. I mean, the English press can get a bit carried away with their own enthusiasm for what's on in London. And a lot of the reviews were quite over-enthusiastic. Some were not, and I'm not.
Yes, Andrew Scott, I've seen him in a few movies.
Yes, he's been very good. He's excellent.
Yeah, and did he do The Cherry Tree by Chekhov in this piece you're talking about? Did he do The Cherry Tree and all that? Well, one of Chekhov's plays, of course. The Cherry Orchard, sorry.
Yeah, well, there's Cherry Orchard, the three sisters, Uncle Vanya, yeah, and the seagull. And they are absolute cornerstones, in my view, of European dramatic literature. They're all splendid. Some people don't agree with me, but that's fine. But they have stayed the course of time, and every time I see them, I love them. But I got nothing from this one man, Uncle Vanya, and I think it was... He's not the sort of person I would think would be self-indulgent, but it seemed to me it's a bit self-indulgent. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's get on to our own. But what's very exciting is that the French Film Festival in New Zealand, in Hamilton, was the most successful ever. They had double the turnout of last year, which is terrific. I went to more than I have seen in the past. The two Three Musketeers ones were terrific, great swashbuckling movies. And there were two real standouts. One was called Divertimento, true story about two sisters from underprivileged backgrounds in the what they call the banlieue, the difficult suburbs of France. About the 1996. One becomes one of the first female conductors in France. The other a great cellist. And that was a real treat. And the other was called, I forget what it's called. Never mind. It was about a true story about the French nuclear program and the French nuclear institution being slowly taken over by the Chinese. And the woman was a whistleblower and got into trouble But what she has said has since happened, and I gather that the Chinese are now providing nuclear power plants to both France and England.
Yep, I went and saw the president's wife with the fabulous Catherine Deneuve as Jacques Chirac's widow, and she was funny. It was brilliant. I think there are a lot of poetic license was taken in that movie, but it just shows the power behind the throne.
Yes, I gather it was very good. So, but I've since written to the French ambassador Therese, it's a woman who sounds lovely because she gave a welcome welcome to every film before the film on a video to say, well done, excellent, a really fine example of what France can be like. On the other hand, we have a dreadful example of what France can be like with the appalling news that the French government has extradited or taken the Kanaks who have been put on trial for some alleged criminal activity in Noumea. They've taken them to France for trial. Now, how colonial is that? So I've written to her on those two issues. Say one big tick, another a big negative.
You're a very astute observer of political process. There's been a New Zealand example that you might question. The case of a minister of the Crown losing her position because of the connection with a family member, which has never been tested in a court, but which nevertheless has been taken to desecrate her political career.
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, what can I say? It's not good enough. Should resign. I mean, what can I say? I mean, I can't say any more than that, really. Yes, it's not acceptable. But this is an example of politicians in many countries being out of touch with the electors,
mm-hmm.
what I call a disconnect.
Yep.
And that was the basis of my submission to the Hamilton City Council on the long-term plan, a terrible disconnect between local bodies, and it's happening throughout the country, and electors. Local yep. bodies doing things that weren't asked for, not known about, and then creating a lot of rage and anxiety and annoyance amongst voters.
Yep.
You speak with experience of having been elected as a councillor elsewhere, and has that been apparent throughout your political interest?
I think it's got worse, really. Plato has made a marvellous saying, you might know, that says that if you do not take part in your democracy, you risk being ruled by your inferiors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's happened in many countries, but in local bodies here, local body politicians in many cases are just not up to the job.
Yeah.
They're not adequate. Now, of course, that's probably a fault of the electors, but the trouble is once a person gets elected and their name is known, they keep being voted for, and on rare occasions when they make such a mess and get into a scandal, they do get tossed out.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, running a city, I suppose, is quite complex, and many of the councillors do not have the ability or the skills to deal with the issues. They rely very much on their staff and their bureaucracy, and increasingly bureaucracies and people in those bureaucracies who are trained and skilled have got their own agenda. And it's been thrown up especially in the whole issue of transport planning, where there's, you know, to be free parking, where there's to be cycleways, where there's to be bus lanes. And often things happen which electors vote did not want.
Yep.
And we've got examples, and I kept a little file before I made my submission, all over the country, with people being outraged and asking, how did this happen? And in many cases, the councillors didn't know themselves.
Yep. You've read the story of Andrew Biders, the Hamilton City Council, having a rage at the Waipa District Council
yes.
mayor. What do you think about the story?
Well, I wrote not so much in defence of Andrew, but I wrote to say I was a bit amazed that people have got a bit upset about the words the F and the C. If they watch television every night, which I do, you will not see a series or a program on at any hour of the day on Netflix or the others, and I'm not sure about the commercial, about the national TV.
Yeah.
Those words are peppered throughout liberally.
Yeah.
I quoted an example last night at 8 o'clock on a seemingly innocent program where F's and C's were used about 25 times in 10 minutes.
Do you lament that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you lament that?
I do. I think it's lazy. Even in foreign language programs, I'm not sure what those languages use in their own original language, but it comes out in the subtitles, which I always have, as F's and C's. And I think that's terribly lazy and terribly
yeah.
boring, but that's really beyond my ability to control or understand. I mean, there are two very ancient Anglo-Saxon words that have been around for a long time, which were then sort of suppressed in the Victorian era and they carried on. I'm of a generation and my first job in Wellington when somebody used F in the office and he was sacked.
Yep.
Of course, people think that's a joke now because it's used. Anyway, my thing with Andrew Bider was that to look behind his what he the words he used and understand his frustration at what seems to be another incompetent local council.
Yep.
And mayor. I don't know if that's the case or not. I've also been a bit criticised by people I admire for saying it's not the language, it was a lack of respect. Well, yes, fair enough. There was a lack of respect for the people involved, but sometimes people have to earn respect. It's not the way I would, the language I would use, although I would certainly use strong language when I find incompetence, which is everywhere now, everywhere there's incompetence. I mean, let's look at Kiwi Rail and some of, I mean, for heaven's sake, pressing the wrong button, a highly played mariner. I'm a bit sort of despondent about the fact that we're being guided and ruled by increasingly incompetent governments.
Well, here's another old English word called prissy. Do you find some of our councillors and mayors prissy? Prissy.
Yes, probably. Yes.
and incompetent. I can't wait till the election because law and order in this city is broken down big
time. Yes, it has. It has. And let's see what happens with this. So I wish they'd change the name from boot camps because the idea of boot camps have been around before in John Key, but they need to find another name for it. But the idea of having young, usually young men, in some sort of organised facility with regular exercise and regular activity and training to do something in regular diets and exercise and out of our society, out of the community. And I was quite pleased to see the very harsh sentence given in Tauranga yesterday by the judge to an 18-year-old of about 8 years in prison for a ram raid. Now, that would have never happened in the past.
Yeah.
But he needs to be not in a prison where he will be influenced by gangs, but he needs to be in some institution where he can get his mess sorted out,
Judge,
and do the things that the parents didn't do.
He was sentenced by Judge Thomas Ingram. Mel knows him.
Yeah.
I've seen him in Hamilton District Court. He is one tough judge. He doesn't stand for nonsense in his courtroom.
Well, it's many probably more of it. But something else I was going to...
Just before you do...
Go on.
The expression boot camps contains the notion of roughing it.
I suppose it also contains the notion of military training, and that's not what's intended. It'll be rigorous, and there'll be it'll be organised, but there does need to be a name, I think, because that's what puts a lot of people off. But a lot of people are a bit wussy. Particularly some of my colleagues.
This training, Russell, the fear in some people's mind is it makes for better criminals.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we should have military academies where if you play up, you go to military school or something like that, 5 o'clock in the morning, up doing press-ups, et cetera, et cetera. You've got to keep these youngsters moving. Give them some confidence.
Yes, particularly males needed activity and challenges, I'm afraid to say. And we've did away with compulsory military training. And I see Germany is thinking of bringing it back because those countries that had compulsory military training, like Switzerland, have a lower incidence of male youth crime.
Mm-hmm.
And of warfare itself. Because Switzerland, to take one example, the best perhaps, and Sweden.
Yes.
Sweden has not fought on a disputed border or anything like that for a good 150 years.
Yes, exactly.
Just before we go, Russell, back to the stage.
To where?
Back to the London stage.
And I don't want to talk about the United States.
No. The London stage.
Sorry
about that. It's my mouth. My mouth running away.
London stage.
There was a recent, and it was filmed. So Ian McKellen, Dame Judi Dench, they were doing Hamlet with some other notaries and British acting. They were doing the famous line from Hamlet, to be or not to be, and they were deciding which was the best version.
Yeah.
Guess who came on stage? He's done Hamlet before. His Majesty King Charles III came on stage and he was regarded as the most brilliant. He did a brilliant version of to be or not to be. he has done Hamlet in at college, at university. So he joined Dame Judy and Sir Ian on stage doing Hamlet recently, and it's been filmed. It's on YouTube.
Oh, very good.
Yeah,
thank you for that.
And of course, I don't
watch YouTube, but a lot of people do. I mean, I've got more than enough to watch, and also I'm quite busy writing my third play.
Tell us.
The one that will be for production soon in February, I'm very pleased about. It's a condensed version of my main play, The Wellspring of Tears, into an hour-long version concentrating on the very important meeting in Tikiwiti in 1857, which the Rangatira of Ngāti Maniapoto decided to appoint Te Wherewhere as their, well, nominate him as their king. And I went through with Professor Tom Roa, my mentor, on the final text for the opening prologue, which he did a great job on. And that, I hope, after a meeting with Ngāti Maniapoto, will be performed in the beautiful Whorenui in Tikiwiti in February on the anniversary. And it will be called, it's interesting, the name in Te Reo is E Tō Ana Te Rā, which means, is the sun setting? Now, the English word, the English title, is not a literal translation, and I had a long discussion of Tom about this, and the English one is "Will the Sun Rise?" So anybody coming back and saying it's not a literal translation, that's intentional, because Māori is full of metaphor, and Tom thinks that those two phrases, "Is the sun setting in Te Reo" and "Will the Sun Rise" in English, are appropriate.
Is this play going to be multilingual?
Yes. It has to be, because the characters, it will be an absolute reconstruction of the event and what happened. And so that's where Tom Roa has been so useful in that. Now, the other play I've been asked to write is for an area called Albert Land. Now, I was surprised to find some people here to never heard of the Albert Landers. Have you?
No. Kaipara Harbour.
Yes.
They settled there expecting that the fields would be lying low like they were where they came from, and they were bitterly disappointed to
But the thing is, it was the last organised settlement in New Zealand. We had the Presbyterians in Invercargill and Dunedin. We had the Anglicans in Christchurch and New Plymouth and Nelson, and of course the unscrupulous Wakefield with Wakefield settlements. This was a non-conformist settlement, and it was done to mark the 200th anniversary when the nonconformists were kicked out of the Anglican Church in 1662.
Yep.
So they arrived in about four ships, 3,000 people on board, all coming out, but they were mainly lace makers, can you believe? No farming experience at all in most cases. They were lace makers from Nottingham, of which I have got three forebears amongst them.
Yep.
Two of them were ministers. They arrived in Auckland. They heard all these stories about the hardship up on the Kaipara, at this place called Port Albert on the Kaipara, which was going to rival Auckland, can you believe, in size. And so most of them stayed in Auckland, where they thought the life was easier.
Yep.
And only 300 went up to Port Albert, where they carved out a life. So the play I'm writing will be to mark an event in the next February, of a key Methodist missionary who spent 30 years in the region, in the Kaipara, called the Reverend William Gittes, who helped facilitate their settlement and facilitate the transactions and dealings with the local iwi.
Yep.
So that will be a play based on historical events, and there's lots written about that era.
You talk about settlements. Next week is the anniversary of the death of Robert Burns, and of course his nephew Thomas came to Dunedin in the church and was one of the original settlers in Dunedin. So it all intertwines.
Yes. And a lot of the descendants of those original Albert Land settlers who went there are still there, and that's why there's several families that I'm connected with. And as it happens, the Reverend William Gittes is my three greats grandfather.
Yep.
So I've got a personal connection. And there's a current Anglican bishop in the Māori Anglican Church called Reverend Kito.
Yep.
Well, he was named after Gittes because Kito is the Māori form of Gittes. Yep.
I love New Zealand history.
It's wonderful.
It is wonderful. We've got to get these stories out, and I wonder if schools are educating their students on New Zealand history?
Well, part of my brief from the is to make a play that has interesting historical facts in it, which it has, because we're lucky in this country, because when people came here, because it was so new, they wrote stories, they wrote books, they wrote diaries. If they'd been staying in England in their Nottingham lace factory, they wouldn't have done that.
Yep.
There wouldn't have been stories written or books written about those people. But here we've got an enormous resource of literature and writing, and particularly in the newspapers of the time. I mean, the play of this Will the Sun Rise, most of that is taken from existing newspaper reports of the time. But it's a lovely story. There's a lovely story which goes through the one in Albert Land, which will be performed in Wellsford. It's called A Pig Full of Surprises, because there was a pig that was a little piglet, and it was an orphan. It was raised by a young girl by feeding it milk, bit like Romulus and Remus.
Yep.
And in the end, becomes so friendly with the locals, it's rather naughty, and it actually devours somebody's bag.
Talking about plays, your original play on some of the civic people like the foes, your play that Mel and I saw that night at the Meteor Theatre. Is there going to be a revival of that original play? Is there ever going to be a revival?
In Prague?
Yeah.
Yes, at the moment now I'm in the final stages of publishing that one, Český Gambit, which was performed last year in Prague. And I'm going there in November to talk about a sort of main stage major production of the play. But the first thought, it's going to be, I'll be publishing it, so I'm quite proud of that.
You have such widespread interests, Russell, and an abiding respect for the quality of te reo, Māori.
Oh, yes.
In translation?
Yes, I do. I mean, every New Zealander now should have that anyway. That's our heritage. And I feel some sort of, I suppose, obligation to my four greats, grandfather and the Reverend John Hobbs and Gittes, because Hobbs was 21-year-old when he came from Kent as a wheelwright, became a Methodist missionary, and he officiated at the second signing of the treaty on the 12th of February in 1840, and had enormous respect for Māori and lifelong friendships. And there'll be a second play in Wellsford, which I'm writing for the local students, and that will be focused on the Māori elements who were there, because without them, and chiefs that are well known and good friends of Gittes, without them, the English settlers would not have survived.
You're a busy man. What do you do to relax?
I won't tell you that.
We never know, do we, Russell, when Russell, something will thrust. Yes.
I write to the newspapers. I'm in a couple of interesting projects. I'm on a council, I hope, approved task force with Margaret Evans and two or three others to rename some streets, but add historical information under the street sign. So that's one that's called, let's call it Footsteps in History. So when you walk around the CBD, the street names will have something under them which tells you why it's called that name.
Oh, to talk about history, please tell Margaret that people walking through Garnon Place are using Dame Hilda Ross's statue to hold up their cans of beer. I saw it last night.
Okay.
This is why law and order has broken down in this city big time.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, also, I think that statue needs to be on a plinth. I don't like the idea it's just anchored to the ground like that. That's not quite, for me, not appropriate. But the whole CBD needs a big shake-up and action. And now the council have at least continued with a one-hour free parking in the central city.
Yeah.
There's now stage two, which I'll be talking about with some of the businesses, because we have to really keep the pressure on the council. Yep.
Well, please come back and talk to us about that. We want to keep up with you, Russell. Thank you for coming in this afternoon. As today we celebrate William Hanna, who formed Hanna-Barbera, the studio that brought us this.
Who is the superhero? Sarge? No. Rosemary, the telephone operator? No. Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be. Hong Kong Bowie, number one super guy.
This is Elfie Beau from Les Miserables.
God.
have always been there. He's young, he's a friend. Let him rest, heaven bless. Bring him
like the sun I might have known.
That's Selfie Bo from Les Miserables as we celebrate Bastille Day.
One by one, how soon they fly.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Good afternoon, Trent.
How's it going?
Very good, very good.
What's happening?
Not much.
Okay, just give us a short headlines of...
Okay, Hamilton Marist are in the final over Old Boys by 50-8. How Chappie in the final, 27-14 by University. Matamata, 29 over Melville, and then Fraser Tech beat Tiamidi. So it's going to be like a Hamilton Marist and How Chappie final next week.
Oh, it sounds wonderful with How Chappie on its keeping on its winning way.
Well, you know, they had to do it before they get into the playoff in the final. So they won the semi final. So you know, it's going to be a legend. Hopefully, depends on if Hamilton Marist will take it out again. It's their third time in a row.
Oh, I'll. Hopefully, How Chappie will win the championship. Go, How Chappie!
Go, Maris.
It's
over 70 years since MGM brought out that fabulous movie with Judy Garland, The Wizard of Oz. It is, if you've seen the movie, the whole movie, it's a great family movie, witches and goblins, and you've probably seen The Wizard of Oz a few times, Trevor.
I think it's a bit longer than 70 years. It came out in 1939.
Yeah, well, let's move up. My maths is hopeless. So it must be over 80 years.
It's around about that.
Yeah, so one of the great movies of 1939, along with Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, same year, that's right.
And all the history behind it, and what did they do to Judy Garland? Anyway, let's get back into 2024. What's been happening in your world this week?
Well, those that don't know, the special news broadcast today, somebody took a pop shot at Donald Trump.
I didn't know that till I was told by a friend today. So
looks like he got part of his ear. Is that a medical centre?
Oh, is it today that he...
Yeah, special broadcast on the news, probably after you would have left for the studio.
That's why we haven't... We get lost in here in a studio, and we don't know these things because everything changes in ours. So,
it was only not long before I came here myself.
Have they found the man who tried to... kill him?
No, not to my knowledge, not in the special broadcast.
So they hit him in the ear, did they?
Yeah, because he had the pop shots, and then Donald Trump grabbed his ear and then went down.
Was he coming out. Was he walking on the street or was he
in a campaign speech.
We'll have to see this later in the day.
It'll be definitely on the 6 o'clock news. Anyway.
Yeah, you know how I feel about Donald Trump, but nobody should take pot shots at presidents. John F. Kennedy.
Exactly, and Ronald Reagan.
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, and so on.
And, of course,
Robert Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the trouble of America, they're so gun-happy. As Canada was so liberal, you get these cranks to get hold of a gun and shoot anyone. There's school kids and teachers and random crowds and so on. I mean, who needs a gun? You don't own a gun, Bruce. Mel doesn't own a gun. I don't own a gun. And I don't know anyone that does own a gun. And you don't need a gun. I'm still bringing that in America.
Did Melanune used to play cowboys and Indians?
With a wooden gun that didn't fire.
You didn't have a cap gun?
No, I think my brother had one.
Yeah, no, we're taking light of it, but no person in public office should be shot at.
And well, it's dangerous in America.
Next week on the history lesson, we're going to be talking about the attempt on the life of Adolf Hitler and what happened in the aftermath.
Well, he was very lucky; he didn't get killed with that bomb explosion in a briefcase.
But the people who did it, Klaus von Stauffenberg was executed. Others were hung by piano wire.
That's right.
So yeah, no. Thank you for bringing us up to date on. After Gary said that an attempt on the life of Donald Trump has been made today, and I'll see some coverage when I get home later this evening.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we do go and let Richard come in here, how many cyclists?
I saw 5 cyclists this week, 3 in the early hours of the morning in black hoods and dark clothes and no lights.
Yep.
Riding on the footpath.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I seen someone use a cycle lane.
Yeah. Just another point before we do go. I did mention earlier that a 12-year-old girl went missing in the CBD last night after 10 o'clock, and the police and CitySafe were looking for her, and they did find her, and hopefully she's home safe with her family, her whānau. But the thing is, why are 12-year-olds on the street late at night on a cold winter's night? It's rumoured she was hanging out with the homeless. And as I said to Russell, law and order is breaking down in the city big time. There's the latest story out of your area that doctor's moving out.
Oh, yes.
And there's been calls to those motels. I think the motel owner should say to the residents, you're gone. Don't want you here anymore. Go away. Go and find somewhere else to live. But he's probably getting a lot of money for them to stay at his place.
My financial incentive.
Hey, Trevor, I hope you're well today.
I had a procedure done at the A&E in Anglesey Street late at night. And that cost me $50.
Yep. You're right today. We don't have
very
to.
Very uncomfortable. I'll fall in the cafeteria.
Oh, I know family members been through that, what happens in one of those medical procedures the last week or so. I won't mention this is a family radio station. Anyway, messieurs and madames, Bastille Day, we are out of here. Maybe Richard's got some French music to play for you. We'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye. Au revoir.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.